Hey there. This is Molly Cash, and I've got a ThoughtWork Basics episode for you today. We are talking about the difference between facts and thoughts. That might seem obvious, but it can be really tricky sometimes to really tell the difference when we are wrapped up in a situation in our minds. There are different levels of this, and honing the skill of being able to separate the two can mean anything from being able to calm down in a situation with your kids, or enjoying your car more than you do now, all the way to letting go of things you've believed about yourself your whole life that you've never been able to see are not actually true. This can truly be life-changing, and it's worth spending some time practicing. So, let's get into it. Very simply put, facts are facts. They're things that are undeniably true. Things we could prove are true. These are not opinions. These are not what all your friends think. They are things with hard evidence that are not subjective. Things like, it is 4 miles from my house to the grocery store. It's not, but you get the point. What wouldn't be a fact is my 5-year-old daughter is cute. Now, sorry to brag a little bit, but she's cute, okay? Most people agree she's cute. But that's not factual because it's our opinion, even if we have the same opinion. The facts would be that she has blue eyes and curly blonde hair with 16 teeth and she's whatever number of inches tall. I know this sounds ridiculous, but it does get trickier. We are generally pretty good at knowing that facts are facts. What we're kind of bad at is identifying thoughts as thoughts. We kind of think that thoughts are facts. We might think that it's a fact that somebody's car is junky. And there's maybe some compelling evidence, like maybe 90% of the car is rusty, and it makes a squealing sound everywhere it goes, and a lot of smoke comes out the exhaust. And most of us would agree that it's a junky car, but do you see how that is our assessment of those facts put together? And it's possible that somebody else has a junkier car, where they would see this one and go, oh wow, it has all 4 doors? That's amazing. What a nice car. Now here's why this matters. Rust on a car means nothing to us without our own assessment. If we think cars shouldn't be rusty, then we're going to feel one way about that car. And if we think rust is not a problem at all, we're going to feel something else. And if somebody day in and day out is thinking my car is a piece of junk, they're going to feel worse than if they're thinking something more along the lines of, I'm so glad that my car runs, or I'm getting great gas mileage. Now please do not confuse this with just look on the bright side, think positive. That's not what this is about. What this is about is drawing a clear line between what you can control and what you can't control. So you can't control the current state of that car. What you can control is your assessment of it, your thoughts about it. You get to choose, I don't want that car. Or, hey, this car's not so bad. I could fix this up. Or, ooh, I could take all the parts out of that and put it in my other car and make something really cool. Or, I'm grateful to have any car. Any of those thoughts are available to you and there's no right or wrong. And yes, of course, you could also change the car itself, fix it up or whatever, and then you would have a new set of facts to have thoughts about. I'll tell you something I used to think was a fact. Snowboarding is fun. Yeah, the first time I tried snowboarding, I loved it, and I did really well. I thought, I'm a natural, I'm going to have to do this all the time, go to the Olympics. But alas, I didn't have that kind of money in college, and so I just went once or twice. And one time that I went, I fell pretty badly and it bruised my tailbone. It was awful. It took just forever to feel like it was normal again. And truly, I don't think it really ever will be normal. There are some, like, it doesn't hurt all the time, but there are some movements that kind of bring back this shadow of the pain. And I'll probably just carry that for the rest of my life. And that's fine. It's not too bad. But snowboarding does not sound fun anymore. There's a lot of me that wants to do it still and wants to try again. But I just think about how stressed out I would be the whole time just trying not to bruise my tailbone again. That wouldn't be fun. And could I work on my mindset so I wouldn't be stressed out? Sure. Do I still have a good chance of bruising my tailbone? Yeah. But even if I don't, I would definitely be thinking about it or doing a whole bunch of mental gymnastics to not be thinking about it. And it just would not be fun for me. It doesn't sound fun. So the statement, snowboarding is fun, can't be a fact. And it never was a fact, but it felt true. It felt like a fact to me when I first tried it. And would a lot of people agree? Yeah. But would others not agree? Yes. So anytime that people could disagree on the statement, we know it's not a fact. It's an assessment or an opinion, aka thoughts. To take another example from my athletic failures, last week I played in a pickleball thing. It wasn't exactly a tournament, but they kind of had you in brackets and you'd play each person with each person and against each person in your bracket, then add up your scores and go to the next bracket based on that. Well, at the end of one of the brackets, I had the lowest score. So you could say I was the worst player in that bracket, having consistently lost and earned the fewest points out of anybody. And this is where it's really important to understand what I can and can't control. Because if I'm thinking I'm the worst player here, and then I have to go play in another bracket, how am I going to do? How am I going to play? How am I going to feel about myself? And how will that come out on the court? But lucky for me, I don't have to think I'm the worst player here. Even though we have data, evidence showing I have the fewest number of points, and I lost against all of these people, I still don't have to think I'm the worst player here, because that's not a fact. And we'll probably never know, but even if I was the worst player there, I wouldn't have to focus on that. I still wouldn't need to give that thought airtime in my brain. And I wouldn't want to, because it's not helpful. It's not a helpful thought. It's not going to make me feel good. It's not going to make me play well. So why should I think that? I know you're dying to know, the rest of the night didn't go great either, and I may very well be the worst player there, but what I chose to think coming away from that, what I wanted to take from it, was not, well, I suck, I'm the worst. I took, I've got some work to do. I have some specific skills to learn that these people are good at. And now I know some people that could maybe help me learn those skills. And I truly don't think I am the worst player there. I think I have different skills than a lot of those players. I think they're good at things I'm bad at and vice versa. But imagine if I couldn't tell the difference between the facts and the thoughts. If I just thought, well, it says here I have the lowest number of points, I lost everybody, therefore I am the worst player. The end. If I had just taken that as fact, I would not walk away from that experience excited to try learning some new things. And this, by the way, is about me and my interpretation. And for somebody else, it might be different. Someone could draw a lot of motivation from thinking, I'm the worst player here, and I'm going to change that. Or maybe somebody could feel relieved and happy to learn that maybe the next level down is a better fit for them. Are you seeing how complicated everything is? With all the situations in our lives, we have the facts And then we have our interpretation of the facts, which mixed with our personality and other facts that we're also interpreting, plus our desires, our pasts, all kinds of other background information. This all combines to create the effect that this situation is going to have on us. So it's not one size fits all. I can't just be like, well, here's the correct way to think about this. Because that might be helpful for me, and it might not be helpful for you. This is one of the main things I help people with as a coach. I help them distinguish between the facts and their thoughts. So that if their thoughts aren't serving them very well, they can choose a different way to assess those facts. And often just the true realization that their thoughts are not facts, that there are other options, other ways they could think about something, a lot of the time, that's enough to create massive change. But I want you to be able to do this for yourself too. So here are 5 questions to ask yourself. Not necessarily if you find yourself going, is this a thought or a fact? That's not how we live our lives. But for any time when you're feeling stuck or hopeless, or any time that you're feeling hurt by somebody else, or angry, or just dysregulated or out of sorts in any way, you might consider asking yourself these questions to see if you're possibly thinking that some thoughts are actually facts. And if you are, it's totally fine. That's what we do. And it happens so quickly and automatically that most of the time we are completely unaware of it. And actually, most of the time, it's not even a problem. But when it feels like you have a problem, try these 5 questions. Number 1, am I using charged or subjective words? I'll illustrate this with an example from my life that used to occur all the time. My kids would come home from school, drop their stuff on the floor, and I would feel like they disrespected me. Because we'd been over this a million times. They knew what they were supposed to do. They knew it drove me crazy when they didn't. And so them dropping their stuff on the floor was a sign that they just didn't respect me. That's how I saw it, at least. So if I were to ask this question, am I using charged or subjective words? My kids don't respect me. Yeah, respect is definitely subjective. I think disrespect, if you phrase it the opposite way, is very charged. So if you ask this question and the answer is yes, it's not a fact. Number 2, could I actually prove this in court? If for whatever reason I needed to go to court and argue that my kids didn't respect me, could I prove that? There's no way, right? Again, it comes back to the subjectivity of respect. What could we do? We could bring in the kids as witnesses and say, do you respect your mother? And no matter what they say, there's still these layers of like, well, are they saying that because they don't want to be in trouble? Are they telling the truth? And even if they are, what's their idea of respect versus my idea of it? It just couldn't be proven. Maybe we could get surveillance footage and prove that I told them not to put it on the floor and prove that they did put it on the floor. But that's as far as we would get. The 3rd question is, would absolutely every single person on this planet agree? Including people on the opposite side of the political spectrum from me, including terrible people that are now spending the rest of their life in prison, including sociopaths, including people in every religion and non-religion. That's a tall order, right? It'd have to be things like, this cup is green. So I could never get everyone on the planet to agree that my kids don't respect me. Number 4 is, what is the data? I think sometimes we equate facts with truth. And because of how we grew up and what we believe and who we are, we really do kind of end up having different truths from each other. And it's really easy to just get that kind of mixed up with facts, thinking that if something's true, then it's a fact. So if we get away from even the word fact and just ask, what is the data? That can really help get to where you're being objective about it. What do we have here? Two backpacks, a jacket, and a water bottle on the floor, 1 foot in front of the door. If you kind of treat it like a detective or a scientist that's just making observations, not interacting with the data, but just observing it and recording it, it helps you slow down and not jump to conclusions like, the children in this home do not respect their mother. And what I really like about this approach is that it might help you notice some other things. Like you might say, these things on the floor indicate that there are children in this house. You might notice that there's one jacket on the hook. You might notice that they closed the door all the way. You might notice that they ran to the bathroom as soon as they dropped their stuff. Or that they were in the middle of a lively conversation. And you might start putting things together like, kids are pretty bad at putting things away just in general. And maybe this doesn't have anything to do with me, just them being like kids, because that's what they are. Okay, the last question, number 5, is kind of magic. I use this a lot with my clients because the way we interpret things, it's all filtered through who we are, right? Our beliefs, our experiences, other things we've already interpreted, strengths and challenges. There's a lot of complex stuff that goes into why we form the opinions we form. So our interpretation of facts or data is not always simply an opinion of that thing, but it includes our opinion about ourselves. There might be this kind of sub-interpretation of, well, I can't stand backpacks on the floor. Or it's really important for me to teach my kids how to show respect. Or maybe I would never do such a thing. So question number 5 is, could somebody else possibly feel differently in this situation? This question gets you out of who you are and all of those sub contexts that go into your interpretation of the facts. And often it just opens up a whole world of possibilities of ways you could think about something. Could you imagine, for example, someone who drops her own stuff on the floor when she walks in the door? She'd probably feel differently about the backpack situation. Or maybe somebody who's super laid back about everything maybe just wouldn't be bothered by it. Or someone who wasn't able to send her kids to school until just recently maybe loves to see the backpacks on the floor because of what it means about the opportunities she's able to give her kids now. It can be really helpful to kind of make up people and stories like this just to loosen up your grip on there being just this one way to interpret what happened. And generally, when you ask this question and you start to see how someone else could see it differently, the natural next step is to wonder, well, why couldn't I see it differently? So that can help you see that you're not dealing with facts, but your thoughts, which are up for grabs. You can change them. And I'm not saying that you always need to or should, but in this real life scenario with the backpacks, me thinking that those backpacks on the floor meant that my kids didn't respect me, it didn't help the backpacks not wind up on the floor. They still did. The only thing that really came out of that thinking or that interpretation was me not treating my kids with respect. Because then I'd get all mad and yell or lecture them about putting away their stuff. So in a way, I was doing exactly what I was accusing them of doing. And when somebody treats you like that, are you likely to respect them? Not so much. So I was kind of creating that reality for myself by seeing it that way in the first place. And once I really saw the difference between the facts and the thoughts in this scenario, it helped me disconnect the two and get on with my life without thinking my kids didn't respect me all the time. My kids dropping their stuff by the door didn't necessarily mean anything about me. I added that meaning with my brain, which meant I also had the ability to drop that meaning. And that is the power of distinguishing between facts and thoughts. So I'm going to review quickly the 5 questions. 1, am I using charged or subjective words? 2, could I actually prove this in court? 3, would every single person on this planet agree? 4, what is the data? And 5, could somebody else possibly feel differently here? Try asking yourself these questions the next time you feel like you're in a problem, and just see if it gives you a little more freedom to feel better or do better or problem solve instead of being stuck. Thanks so much for being here, and I will see you next time. Ciao.